And good morning. Welcome to the KRFY Morning Show for this day, Wednesday, January 29th. I'm your host, Chris Bessler. I'm in the studio here. My co-host, Susie Prez, she is actually, we're having some intermittent issues with the broadcast. We hope you can hear us right now. If you can't, this is going to be streamed online. You can catch us that way if we're going in and out. And we'll also have a podcast posted later today. But as I said, it is the morning show. It's January 29th. And we are going to be talking today with folks from the Friends of the Scotchman Peaks Wilderness. We have with us right now Phil Huff. Phil, thanks for getting in here.
Good morning, Chris.
And we're going to be joined as well with by Britta Meyerly. She's a deputy executive director. Phil, you're the executive director. And actually, what's happening is we're coming up on kind of a momentous anniversary.
We are. We celebrated in January here our 15th anniversary of the forming of the Friends of Scotchman Peaks Wilderness. Of course, the work to designate the area as wilderness goes back deeper into history, and we can touch on both of those things.
Yeah. Yeah, we have a lot to talk about. We'll be back to that in just a moment. But first, we're going to talk about the weather. And right now, if you can look outside, it's in Sandpoint, it's rainy, it's snowy up at the higher elevations. We're going to see that today up until 2 p.m. Then in the afternoon, it's going to be rain tonight, rain and snow again. Patchy morning fog is going to be happening. Our high today is predicted to be 38 degrees. Our low here in Sandpoint will be 30 degrees. Tomorrow, pretty much the same. Areas of fog, then chance of rain and snow. Same as well for Friday. We'll see a slight warming. It'll get up to as high as 45 degrees Friday. And then going into the weekend, we're going to see rain, high of 47 on Saturday. Sunday, a high of 38. Rain and snow likely. So it's kind of a holding pattern for our weather here.
It's not a nice day. It's the bridge is icy, goes slow. Traffic was nearly stopped on the way in. And the good news is that there's no one directing traffic, which means that people were being very respectful of each other. Slow down, let people in, let people pass.
Yes, it's really important to give extra room between you and the vehicle in front so that you have time to react. The stopping times are a lot slower when you get these slippery conditions. We do have a little news from the city of Sandpoint this morning, the Sandpoint City Minute, as we like to play each week. And this is from Jennifer, our city administrator. Beginning Sunday, December 5th. Oh, hold on. This is actually a series that's in process right now. It began on Sunday, December 15th. The city of Sandpoint has been releasing weekly surveys using its Open Town Hall platform. The surveys are topic specific and designed to inform our master planning efforts for the city that are currently underway. It's including a comprehensive plan update and a multimodal transportation plan. This week's survey is, which kicked off on January 26th, is on growth and land use. The note here is Sandpoint has experienced significant growth over the past few years. As continued growth is anticipated, planning for it and corresponding future land uses are important to maintain community values and also strategically respond to the related challenges and opportunities that growth brings. So if you'd like to put in your opinion on growth matters, go to sandpointidaho.gov. You'll find a link to click to the survey. And you can also, while you're there, you can sign up for the Engage Sandpoint application. And Phil, a little civic question here. Have you filled any of those surveys?
I have. You know, as an interested person, I'm not a resident of the city, but I'm often visitor. I work here by day. I play here by night. Sandpoint certainly is the focal point for our larger community, and it's important we get these things right.
Yeah, and of course, your offices are located right in downtown Sandpoint, so you have a stake in it that way. I'm in the same boat. I don't actually live in the city limits. I live up Baldy, but I have a business in town. I get to pay taxes. I don't get a vote. So
a vibrant Sandpoint's important to us all.
Yeah, it certainly is. It's our community, center of our greater North Idaho community here for most of us. A few other things going on around town. Well, one thing that's happening is the Scotchman Peaks Wilderness, Friends of Scotchman Peaks Wilderness is having their Wild and Scenic Film Festival That's happening Saturday, February 1st. I don't know if I'm telling you this in vain, because are there still tickets available?
We are sold out of tickets. Yeah. There's the occasional stray ticket that dribbles back from someone who can't use it, but right now there's actually a wait list.
So if you want to go to that, you might try to get on the wait list. You could email scotchmanpeaks.org. But that's, a collection of fantastic films.
It is going to be a fabulous evening of films. We also have a lot of other fun things going on that night. We've got an open bar, no host bar, but we do have complimentary hors d'oeuvres. We have a wonderful array of auction items for people. It's going to be a great evening to celebrate the community of people who support the wilderness designation for the Scotchman Peaks.
Yeah, and that, again, that's a Saturday, February 1st. It's at the Heartwood Center, keep your eyes open. Maybe a ticket will shake loose. Other things going on around town. Susie Prez, my co-host.
Hi, Chris. I'm back, and we are back on the air, and we're always streaming. So whatever was going on up at the Schweitzer Tower, it's been fixed. I pushed a bunch of buttons, and I don't think I did it. I think it was just synchronistic or whatever. But, yeah, welcome and good morning, and welcome to the morning show. Have you done the Sandpoint City Minute?
Yes, we did.
And the weather. Okay.
And the weather.
Then we are
ready. We've been rolling on while you were out there flipping switches and trying to get us back on the air.
And we just had a Britta Meyerly walk in. And Britta is the deputy executive director of Friends of Scotchman's Peaks. So she'll be sharing with us, you know, a bigger picture of what this organization has to offer and has been offering for 15 years to our community.
Yep.
So welcome, Britta.
Thanks, Susie.
And with that, let's just roll in today's topic. We'll come back to that later in the show, maybe, and tell some more events going on around town. Of course, if you ever need to know what's happening in town, you can go to our website, krfy.org. We get all the details, see what's happening, times and places and all that.
And we are recording this interview today, so if you don't get to hear the whole thing, you can always go to our website again, krfy.org, and listen to it later in the morning. And with that, I just wanted to read the mission that I found of Scotchman's Peaks to start the conversation. I wanted to get into how it started, and Phil, you'll have to fill in, and then where we're going and what or where the organization is now. So since it's 15 years, that's enough territory to cover today. The mission: to protect the Scotchman Peaks for future generations through wilderness designation, ongoing stewardship, and education. That's really broad, but one of the words that stands out is wilderness designation, and we'll get into that. So, Phil, why don't you tell us about the origin and inception of this organization, what those early founders envisioned, and what motivated them, and how it has evolved over the past 15 years?
Sure, I'd love to.
Big question.
Back in the early 2000s, in those heady days of 2003, the Forest Service began a long, boring process to revise their master plan. And many of the people who were at the inception of the Scotchman Peaks were attending those forest plan meetings. And the common thread or reaction we had was not enough conversation was being given to the potential for wilderness designation. It was getting lost in a host of other issues, which, while very important, many of us felt that wilderness was also a very important component of what a good forest plan should hold. So we got together to talk about that general concept of wilderness, and most of the people in the room had some connection, very specific connection, to this special place, the Scotchman Peaks. So we zeroed in on that as one of the things that should be most obvious to our communities as a benefit to the community, and had the lowest potential for conflict. So should have the greatest ability to smooth sailingly simply forward to designation. Little did we know that that process takes more than 3 to 5 years, the one we originally envisioned. The area, for our listeners who may be new, just to describe the lay of the land, if you will, the Scotchman Peaks proposed wilderness area is at the heart of the Scotchman Peaks roadless area, the southern half of the West Cabinet Mountains, lying just north and east of Lake Pend'Oreille, about a third in Idaho and about two-thirds in Montana. So it's got a split state, if you will, part in each state, which becomes very important to building community and also to building the political process. But to complicate things further, it lies in two national forests that have separate management, the Idaho Panhandle Forest and the Kootenai Forest. And then it occupies three counties, two time zones, none of the things divide evenly along the same imaginary line that Idaho and Montana do. So it's a bit of a jigsaw puzzle.
You say we, mm-hmm. and who's we? Give us kind of the origin story here. What group of people got together to say, hey, let's go after this?
At the beginning, there were about 20 people who gathered together in a living room here just north of Sandpoint. Most of the people were involved in either one of several different things. They had been attending the forest planting meetings I was mentioning. A good number of them were from the local Kinnickinnick Native Plant Society's Conservation Committee. A few were longtime supporters of the Cabinet Resource Group or Montana Wilderness or Idaho Conservation League. But by and large, most of the individuals weren't members of those existing organizations. Some were. So it was a really unique collaborative set of folks that Cesar Hernandez from Trout Creek knew and reached out to, or in an enlarging circle of people that I knew and reached out to, or who came to this sort of organically. And one of the things we realized right away was the power of this collective voice representing very diverse interests, and including people who weren't just the usual conservation environmentalist supporters. That was one of the driving factors at the very beginning. How do we make this thing go? And it was by enlarging the circle of people who would support it, but it was to reach out to more than just the conservation groups working on these issues, but to reach into the community at large and bring people in who don't normally interact with each other, to really build this community of supporters from a very diverse background.
I had a question. When you mentioned that everyone, most people in the beginning group had a connection to this piece of land called Scotchman Peaks.
Yeah.
When was it named Scotchman Peaks, and was there a Scotchman?
Yes, great questions, and they come up often. And some things are simply lost to history, how certain places got their names. Some cases are well documented. In others, we have a lot of conjecture going on. And trying to track it down, we did some research at the Bonner County Historical Society Museum a number of years ago. And there is a photo in a very old book, black and white photo of the Scotchman Peaks from somewhere in Lake Ponderay, and a caption underneath it saying that an early pioneer looked up and thought he saw the ruffled shirt and tam o'shanter of a sleeping Scotchman. And I don't know, you've got to have you have to be imbibing a certain amount of fluid before you can see that vision clearly. And what I'm going to tell you next is my own theory. I can't prove it, but it resonates true for me. I think that somewhere it was an early homage to the early explorers of the area, because we know that David Thompson, who was the first European to come through the area, and who left the first shopkeeper, Finn and MacDonald, and then later David Douglas, who came through there, were all from Scotland. And so I think some number of people that settled around with this early clan wanted to pay tribute to it. And Scotchman, of course, is an Americanization. It's not a real world. It should be, grammatically to be correct, it should be Scotsman. And that sometimes trips up the grammar police. But I think that this was just a way to pay tribute to early explorer David Thompson and his cronies.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, John Muir was a Scotchman, a
yes.
famous one.
Yes.
And I don't know if that has any relationship to this at all. But
He never came through our area the best we know of, although he took a lot of long walks. And like a lot of long walkers, sometimes we don't give away our most favorite secret areas.
Yeah, yeah. He has a fascinating history as well, as long as we're the local folks.
So I just
go ahead.
I just
Britta.
Assumed it was someone that really likes scotch.
Well, that's another thought, isn't it? So you formed this diverse group, and as you said, it wasn't just conservation groups, no. but people and folks that were interested and came together in 2003. And Phil, when did you get on board, and what inspired you to mm-hmm. dedicate your time and energy to lead and evolve the idea of wilderness? Mm-hmm. For Scotchman Peaks.
Sure. So I was at the early organizational meeting and helped pull together a number of people there. And as we're looking around the room, at that time, I was not working. I was volunteering some time, and I was preparing for a long hike. My wife and I love to hike. We take long rambles, 5-6 months. At the time, we were planning a hike of the Pacific Crest Trail. And these hikes have been very informative. They've kept me close and near and dear to the land. And some of the most precious wilderness areas we have are the heart of some of our America's Long Trails, the Appalachian Trail, Continental Divide, Pacific Crest Trail. I had finished two of those, was planning the third one, and had the opportunity to bring together folks for this cause, and was motivated by my love for wilderness. And we thought then that we would be just a few years into it. We weren't, most of us, really familiar with the political process. So we reached out to some others who were to gain some education about how to go about advocacy. And so it was a driving passion for me to work on wilderness. And it was clear from those first conversations with others about how the political process works that congressmen and senators tend to listen to their constituents, and they want the loudest, most diverse voice possible. And so we really needed to bring in these people who might not ordinarily consider themselves to be environmentalists or even conservationists, but who cared about the area. So early on, we decided we would focus on the one issue of wilderness for the one place so that we could gain support from those people who might think that the Scotchman Peaks as wilderness was a good idea, but they might not buy into the other agenda of groups working on a wide array of other issues for which this was just one. So our voice was going to be focused solely on the Scotchman Peaks to give the biggest tent possible.
So Scotchman Peaks, of course, is in the cabinet range. Did that group, when you were talking about making wilderness or going for a wilderness thing, did you look at the Selkirks? Was that of interest as well? Since there is an area that's a defined roadless area there.
Yeah, very good. Very good question. So at the first two meetings, we had long discussions about, as a group, what should we focus in on? Should it be just the Scotchman Peaks? Should it be the entirety of the West Cabinets? Should it include the Selkirks? Should it include other parts of Northwest Montana? How big would this project get? And after a lot of honest and candid and sometimes robust conversation, we decided that the best thing to do in order to achieve the success for the core vision of advancing wilderness conversation was to focus in on the Scotchman Peaks area. And that was in part a strategic decision because of the already existing support for the area and already deep connections of some of the people who are going to really be carrying the cause forward.
I'm wondering, yesterday we were talking about the word wilderness, and so often I think through the process that you've been doing for the last 15 years, there's been some misnomers about that it shuts it off, it closes it down, it makes it inaccessible. But that's, why don't you explain that whole, something is designated wilderness and why it's important?
Sure.
You may have already touched on it, but a little bit more about that.
So there's a legal definition of wilderness because of the 1964 Wilderness Act. So wilderness with the capital W as designated by Congress is a construct of our society. And in 1964, the Wilderness Act passed by an overwhelming margin with only 3 dissenting votes in the Senate and less than 10 dissenting votes in the House. So big bipartisan, nonpartisan support for capital W. But the devil's in the details. It's all what it means to manage it that way and what areas there are. And it, most importantly, the 64 Wilderness Act designated a small amount of wilderness areas across the country, about 10 million acres, but it envisioned a process by which Congress would designate future wilderness areas. And it directed the agencies to do some surveys, and it didn't say specifically, here's the role for citizens group, but it left to Congress the decision to make on which areas to include, which always means there's a role for citizens to advise their congressmen on what they want. So to date, that particular action, that legislative designations occurred over 350 times to include now 800 areas across the country in a system that's 110 million acres. It still has a large amount of acreage suitable, as determined by the Forest Service, recommended, but is awaiting congressional action. That's the big W. The smaller W, as a concept throughout history, throughout philosophy, has always fascinated man. Man's relationship to wilderness is something that's been written about, spoken about, dreamt about. It's at the core of our existence on this continent when the Europeans settled the North American continent. We had competing visions of the wilderness, whether it was something to be tamed or threatened about or retreat to. In a lot of ways, the smaller W wilderness has really defined how we are as Americans. And for many people, it's important to preserve that part of our heritage by making sure we have these places that are as untouched as possible by man so we can continue to evolve our individual selves and our culture.
I'm just wondering if you could explain, because this has been your passion for 15 years, what about Scotchman makes it so special and makes it so perfect for wilderness designation? From your point of view?
My wife and I, again, have hiked over 9,000 miles across America's premier trails. Across this country, we've seen over 200 wilderness areas as designated by Congress. Some of the wildest, most remote places in the lower 48 we have visited. When we walk into the Scotchman's, I feel as if there's no place left that's wilder than the Scotchman's. it contains that very sense. And some of this is just you have to walk in and feel it in the gut of your stomach. But when you know, you might turn around a huckleberry patch and come face to face with a grizzly bear, and you're no longer at the top of the food chain. And when there are no real good maps of some of the interior drainages that are going to tell you all the little dips and swirls and things you might trip over, you know you're in pretty wild country.
And what's good about that? I mean, from your point of view, because as you said, this is something you've done a lot. I'm not sure I'd want to go around a corner and see a grizzly bear. It doesn't, you know, make me excited. But in that feeling of wilderness, what you're saying is it's untouched.
It's untouched.
For the most part.
I connect with a lot of things that Aldo Leopold has said. And when he talks about the blank spaces on a map, that can either be frightening or intimidating, or in this age, confounding, because we have GPSs that go everywhere, right? But it's those blank spaces on the map that allow our imaginations to just soar. So for me, the value is the imagination, the sense of solitude, the sense of connection, the sense of humility. It really puts us into a place where we know we're part of this larger thing, but we're not quite sure what it means. And so we can sit there and reflect on it. Feel it really more than think about it.
Mm-hmm. If you're just tuning in, this is the morning show, 88.5 KRFY, with host Chris and Susie. And we're talking today with Friends of Scotchman Peaks Executive Director Phil Huff and Deputy Director Britta Meyerly. Britta, let's bring you in on the conversation. You don't get a free ride here. How does this concept of wilderness that Phil just described, how does that resonate with you? And why are you, is this a work of passion for you, I assume, as well?
Definitely. I've always been passionate about public lands and having that escape into them. I grew up in the Black Hills of South Dakota, and while we weren't backpackers, and I have not hiked even a tenth of the miles that Phil has, I still love the idea that you can just get away. Life is so stressful, and I mean, all of us have our phones out all the time. I have always, as an adult, worked pretty much behind a desk, and so getting away from that craziness of life is so valuable. And also, I have a 3-year-old, and she has hiked the first mile of Scotchman Peak, and watching her kind of just come to life in the mountains and in nature where there's nothing but us, maybe another hiker or two, and nature. It's amazing to watch that. And huckleberries go a long ways in getting her up a trail.
Gotta pick your season.
yeah, we definitely pick our season.
Yeah. And then, so tell us a little bit about your story. How did you get involved with Friends of Scotchman Peak Wilderness?
My husband and I we're both transplants, but grew up in rural areas and had been living in a slightly denser area and moved here about 4.5 years ago, just over 4 years ago. And I didn't have a job. And I'd made a few friends and started following local groups on Facebook, including the Friends, and saw this position come up in April, March of 2016? 15.
16.
And applied and got it.
Lo and behold.
Right? And kind of unleashed this passion I didn't realize I had. I knew I loved public lands. I knew I liked the concept of wilderness. But the more I learned about it, the more connected with it I became.
And as deputy executive director, now you weren't always that, but you kind of came back into it after your daughter was born. In the mission statement, it talks about getting designation for wilderness, but also ongoing stewardship and education. Is that the focus mostly of the work you're doing? Is that
yes and no? I do a lot of different things as deputy. We're a small organization, and so that means we all learn a little bit of everything. When Phil and I kind of created this position, we talked about what made the most sense for my focus, what made the most sense for his focus, and sort of divided and conquered, if you would. So we look at advocacy for wilderness for the Scotchmans as kind of a second side of the coin with education and stewardship and outreach. They're all connected, and in our minds you can't do one without the other. So as advocates for wilderness designation for the Scotchman Peaks, we, like Phil said, getting out in the Scotchmans is one of the best ways to fall in love with it. And so we have group hikes that volunteers lead, and we have volunteers that help maintain trails in the Scotchmans, because nothing makes someone want to protect an area like getting your hands dirty and breaking a sweat, digging some tread. So we do a lot of different programs that connect everything together.
Well, the breadth of those programs we'd like to hear about, but I think I heard Chris queuing up a song. What song do you have for us, Chris? And then we'll come back and get into some of those programs, because I do agree with you when you're involved on the level of enjoyment and work. It really changes how you feel about possibly a piece of land, a beautiful piece of land. So what do you have, Chris?
Okay, we're going to hear a short couple minutes of song here. It's Walkin' Jim Stoltz, Back on the Trail Again, the Long Trails. And actually, we're going to catch this song in progress. So we'll be back in just a second. Hang with us, and we're going to talk some more about the 15th anniversary of Friends of Scotchman Peaks Wilderness.
Lost friend. Some blame to think I'm just a part of the wind when I'm back on.
And that was Walkin' Jim Stoltz, Back on the Trail Again. And we're back in the studio here at 88.5 KRFY, talking with the couple folks from the Friends of Scotchman Peaks Wilderness and the 15th anniversary of that great organization here.
15 years.
15 years. That's kind of a big milestone.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah.
And we have Britta Meyerly and Phil Huff, Executive Director and Deputy Executive Director. And before the break, the song break with that song, that was a great song, we're talking about the programs that really support the work that you're doing and the thought of designation of wilderness. You have the ongoing stewardship and education. So these programs, why don't we get into that a little bit more, Britta?
Thanks, Susie. You mentioned before the break, we were kind of touching on how advocacy and stewardship and education and outreach are all so integrated. And I also mentioned that we have a small staff, and we would not be able to do a tenth of the work that we do without the 150 plus volunteers we have every year. And we kind of look back over the past 3 to 5 years, and we've had probably 400 to 500 unique individuals that have stepped up and helped in some way or another, whether it is hanging out at our outreach booth at 7B Sunday, talking to folks or ensuring that things don't blow away, or getting dirty and maintaining trails, pulling out the crosscut saw, and even people that don't know how to use some of these trail tools. That's what our staff and some of our more senior volunteers are for, to teach them how to use them so that it's fun, enjoyable, and also safe. We have trail ambassadors that hike Scotchman Peak all summer, weekends and holidays, from mid-June to early October, talking to folks about goats. I think a lot of folks remember back in 2015 when the Scotchman Peak Trail was closed due to a goat encounter. And fire, and the trail stayed closed due to the goat encounter.
What was that about?
An individual was up on Scotchman and was letting a goat lick the sweat off of his legs, and he wanted to be done before the goat wanted to be done. And there was blood and stitches involved. And so we want to make sure that doesn't happen again, and that the trail stays open for everybody.
So that's the Goat Ambassador Program.
Yeah, we call them trail ambassadors. It's kind of a goat education program, except you're not actually educating the goats, you're educating the people. So that's a fun program, trying to keep humans and goats at a safe distance. We have, right now, we are in the middle of our Winter Tracks program, which is really cool. We have volunteer instructors that are out with kids in the field. In Bonner County, we tend to have school groups meet us at Round Lake, which is an amazing place to have a field trip. And the volunteers teach them about mammals of our area, how to identify trees during the winter, how to use a map and compass in the land of, in the day of GPSs. And sometimes, you know, your GPS fails you and you need to get out the map and compass.
It's always good to know where north is.
It really is good to know. Yeah.
Sadly, that's becoming one of the primitive skills we teach.
Traditional skills. And things like avalanche safety, which we all know is definitely an important thing right now. So if folks are interested in hanging out with some kids during the winter for a day, and you're like, oh man, I don't have any of this knowledge that I could share with them, that's okay. We need folks to hang out with a small group of kids and get them from station to station, so you get to learn too. Or pour hot cocoa and have the kids come up and be very, very excited and thankful to have that cocoa in their cold little hands. So we do a lot all year round.
And so these volunteers would get some training.
Absolutely.
They would have, and how would they get a hold of you to get on board?
There's a couple different ways. So visiting our website, scotchmanpeaks.org, Scotchman singular, peaks plural, .org. Emailing our general email address, info@scotchmanpeaks.org. Or you could give our office a call, 208-265-4236.
Is there a particular skill you're looking for right now that a volunteer could say, hey, I can do that?
Honestly, if you have any skill, we can probably find a use for it. Even if it is licking envelopes.
Yeah.
Or, we pretty much...
Do you still lick envelopes? And don't they...
honestly, so we do have the little moisture thingies, with the little sponge, and so you don't actually have to lick them.
We find our best volunteers are people who have some connection to the area. This is why advocacy and volunteering and stewardship and education really are all parts of the same coin, cube, however you want to look at it. People come, they get involved, they might come out on a hike, come to an event. They might encounter a goat ambassador on the trail as a hiker, and then they come back later in the season and they want to put the shirt on and be one themselves, and then they come to an event. And this is one of the ways we build this community of people.
Mm-hmm. You know, speaking of the goat, I guess you'd say it's a problem. It's not really a problem. The goats should, be doing great up there. But the problem does come if the goats get too acclimated to people.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. That's exactly it.
Yeah. And they become actually dangerous. There was a man that was killed over in the Olympic National Park by a goat. It's a wild animal. They act kind of friendly to us because they're so acclimated to us, but they're unpredictable.
That happened just 2 years before the incident on Scotchman Peak in 2015. And the concern at that time of our local land managers and wildlife agency, the Idaho Department of Fish and Game, was that they needed to make sure that a fatality didn't occur. So the choices that they have were really, really limited to closing the area to hikers altogether, obviously not good. Removal of the mountain goat and translocating the one goat or the herd somewhere, or a lethal action. And obviously none of those three things are good for goats or hikers.
Mm-hmm.
So they closed the trail for about 8 months to give the goats and people a little bit of breathing room. And then we decided we'll try education as the next step. Prevention is a lot better than having to take some rehab action.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to be working.
Was the prevention part of a collaboration with Fish and Game?
Yes. Our program was designed in cooperation with both Idaho Department of Fish and Game, who have provided their wildlife biologists and outreach experts to help train the goat ambassadors, in cooperation with the Forest Service, who again has provided some personnel to assist with the training. And we do it as a bigger collaborative thing. We reach out to other organizations in the area to help coordinate volunteers. One of the best sources we have for volunteers is the cooperative arrangements we have with Idaho Master Naturalists, a local group, the Native Plant Society, by advertising the availability through Montana Wilderness Association, Idaho Conservation League, all these community groups. Various schools in the area have come out and assisted in large numbers with their students, most notably Sandpoint High School, Gonzaga University, University of Montana, Missoula. We've engaged a lot of schools along the way, not just with trainings for the winter tracks, but also with providing students as ambassadors and as other volunteers.
The charter school came out last year and did some trail work with our program coordinator, which the pictures show the kids were really enjoying themselves. What better than sitting in school is hanging out and getting dirty.
I think the most fun project we've had on trails with the schools, when we rerouted the lower mile of the Scotchman Peak Trail so it wouldn't be that steep, upon completion of the new trail, we had to remove or take out the old trail. Getting a group of juniors and seniors from Sandpoint High School out there to demolish trail. They really loved picking at it with the axes, throwing logs in it, just destroying it. So you let unleash teenagers to destroy something, and it really turned them on.
That sounds like a win-win opportunity. Yeah. And I'm just looking at your brochure. There's lots of different hikes. I mean, I've heard the Scotchman Peak Trail is quite a hike, probably something out of my range, but there are other hikes.
Susie, it's not out of your range. You could do it if you just took your time.
Go slow.
A couple weeks, maybe. But there's a lot of other trails in the Scotchman's area, the hikes in the Scotchman's. I didn't realize Ross Creek Cedars was in the other side, the Montana side of Scotchman.
I think that I enjoy the Cedars, so I've hiked Scotchman, and also I'm in terrible shape, and so I can hike it. It's not pretty, and I'm sore for a couple days. And so there are, close to Sandpoint, there's some good hikes. Regal Creek is really nice. It's not super steep. It's up the Lightning Creek drainage outside of Clark Fork, and you get awesome views of the kind of Lightning Creek drainage up in that area without having to hike very far. And also, I mentioned I have a three-year-old, so I'm not going to haul her up Scotchman. That would be awful. I can barely get myself up it. So going to the Cedars is amazing. We can walk around the nature loop, and then back out the back of the nature loop is trail number 142, I think. And it's just this nice, relatively flat backcountry trail that you can just wander down. And it's really amazing. You get away from the busyness of the Cedars because, you know, on a nice weekend, people tend to flock. And I'm just 10 feet off the nature loop, and it's nice and quiet and peaceful and quite fun for the family.
One of the real gems of the Scotchman Peaks area has become the Star Peak Trail, which, again, we redid the lower couple miles of it several years ago. So that as soon as you get on it, within the first half mile, you start getting these wonderful views of the Clark Fork River Valley, and that continues all the way on up. So you can go to the top, but you can also go partway, enjoy a picnic, turn around and come back for a shorter, easy, more moderate hike year-round because the trailhead's right on the main highway.
I have to admit, I like Star better than Scotchman. There's fewer people. No goats. And when you get to the top, there's this cool lookout, and it's a beautiful hike. And with far more views further down.
I haven't been there. Can you access the lookout when you are at the top?
No, it's closed now. Mm-hmm. You can walk around it and look at it. It's an historical structure that the Forest Service, some years ago decided they would just simply leave and let deteriorate. And so that's the state that it's in right now. But it's interesting to look at the historical structure, the lookout itself. And right beneath the summit is the stone cabin that was built in the early days to house the personnel that went up there. It's the very first structure on the Kootenai National Forest. It's on the National Historical Register.
Is that date to what, the 40s or 30s?
No, 19, and you get different time estimates all within just a few years of each other, 1906, 1908, 1910.
Oh, earlier than that, okay. Yeah, that would have been prior to the big fires of 1910.
Prior to the big fires.
Yeah.
One thing I noticed on the map here are the different hikes that are available. There are limits to group sizes, but that doesn't mean only 12 at a time on Scotchman's, but in a group going up together. I think that was a misnomer that was propagated during the period when this was being voted on in the county.
It is. And so, first of all, across the country, out of all the wilderness areas, about half of them have size limits, restrictions by the agencies that manage them. The Scotchman Peaks is a proposed wilderness area. It doesn't have that at this point in time, but once it becomes designated, it likely will. We've worked out an agreement with the Forest Service that for the hikes we lead, we have a voluntary size limit on the Idaho Panhandle of 12, on the southern part of the Montana 12, and in the northern part 8, and that has to do with the needs of the landscape. And that's voluntary, and we do adhere to that, and that's a group size. But more than one group can go in during a day, and that's entirely possible. There was some misinformation going around about only 12 heartbeats at any given time in the wilderness, and that was just plain bad information. It's not true here, and it's not true anywhere else. The group sizes are again, always predicated on an individual group.
Mm-hmm. And we see the benefit for the volunteers that lead the hikes. Having more than 12 gets a little, that's a lot of people to keep track of. And so it's easier for volunteers as well that are leading those hikes and field trips.
And I presume the idea is to, we do want to maintain the wilderness character and give people the idea they're getting away. So groups larger than that coming in might detract from that for other users.
One of the things, for other users and for the people in the group themselves, one of the values of wilderness is that sense of solitude. And if you've ever tried to go out hiking with a group of 30 or 40 people, you lose that sense of solitude even just in that group.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about a couple other misconceptions about wilderness. One might be that there's no hunting in wilderness. I think that was something we heard during the vote a couple years ago.
No, there's nothing in wilderness that restricts hunting. Now, in some national parks, there are restrictions on hunting because there's national park status, whether they're wilderness or not. But in Forest Service managed wilderness, typically there are no restrictions on hunting. There was nothing in the proposal for the Scotch and Peaks bill that would limit hunting. Hunting is an activity managed by each state's Department of Fish and Game, and it would continue to be managed by the Department of Fish and Game.
Mm-hmm. Another thing you hear as a knock on a wilderness designation is that when you do designate a place wilderness, it actually ends up attracting more people because there are people that are interested in going to the nation's wilderness areas. And I think some locals thought, oh, we're going to get people flooding into the Cabinet Wilderness, the Scotchman Peaks Wilderness. What would your response be to that?
Wilderness can attract more people, and a lot of folks think that's a good thing, at least, of course, to a limit. But it comes back to what we started the show at. How do you manage growth? How do you manage use? And it's certainly better to look at how we manage things before they become out of control. And wilderness designation is a tool that can enhance the attractiveness in the area. It's also one that can look at things like size limits to manage them. But the situation in the Scotch and Peaks is different than many others. We don't live within an hour drive of a huge multi-million dollar or million people metropolitan area, like say some along the Cascade Crest when you're that close to Seattle. You have wilderness areas that are going to see much higher use. The Scotchmans also have very few places that make for good overnight camping. There are some in the backcountry, which we love, but they're a little harder to get to. So it's going to mostly be day use because of the nature of the terrain, the nature of the trail system. And while usage may increase with wilderness designation, right now with the increase in population in the inland Northwest and increasingly active lifestyle for each generation as it ages, all of our places are seeing more usage than they used to. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think we could see an excellent example right next door at the Cabinet Mountain Wilderness, mm-hmm. which I have hiked in a number of places there. I haven't often will go without seeing anybody else. So that is not a de facto indication that we're going to see a ton of use occur.
Back in 2016, there was the ballot question, or the question on the ballot in the county. It was the for the county. It didn't pass, but there was a lot of questionable information that may have contributed to that. But did that change the focus or the direction of the work of Scotchman Peaks, Friends of Scotchman Peaks?
The short answer is no. Our direction, our focus is the same before that ballot advisory vote as it is now, which is to seek wilderness designation by continuing to build public support by engaging an increasingly diverse set of supporters and voices that support it. And we do that through the various program offerings we have. We also do that by having conversations with people, doing presentations, radio shows like this, going and meeting with individuals and with groups and talking to them about the value of wilderness, doing programs in areas of the counties that we work in, but larger geographic areas is too, well, some of those in partnership so we can work cooperatively with folks who will help to get the message out. It's clear from that ballot initiative that more education needs to be done. That's what we've always been mostly about and what we'll continue to be about because of that need. There was some bad information there that was propagated, I think, in part to create some fear over it. And fear is a powerful motive. So demystifying wilderness has always been at the center of what we do.
And that is a designated roadless area. I mean, it's going to remain wilderness with a small W, as you described it previously.
It changed. The vote changed nothing. It's continuing to be managed as recommended wilderness, the same as it has been since the 1970s, and the same as it will continue to be. Upon designation, what will change is the need for the Forest Service to revisit that recommendation every 15 to 20 years. It'll become permanent. So it's put by people who have really thought through the Wilderness Act. It steadies the hand of the administrator in the Forest Service agency who might be tempted by administrative action to make a small change to the management area.
Well, it's a big job. You have a great organization. It sounds like you're clear on the work you're doing, but it takes a lot to keep this organization going. And you're celebrating 15 years, so tell us what's coming up to make this celebration very special.
So our official 15th anniversary was in January, January 14th, and we decided to celebrate that February 1st, this Saturday, with a Wild and Scenic Film Festival. We felt that it was kind of the best way to celebrate the community that has come together over the Scotchman Peaks over the last 15 years, and whether those folks have been involved for 15 years or whether this is their first interaction with us. We're really excited to show 10 inspiring films about ranging from stories of veterans coming back from overseas with PTSD and addiction and finding themselves again in nature and coming back from that, or this adorable 11-year-old little boy that wants to save the monarchs, and he raises monarch butterflies and teaches other kids about the monarchs. We're going for happy and inspiring. Hopefully everyone has their tickets. They are sold out. So if you don't have your ticket, start asking around and maybe you can find one. We'll be at the Heartwood Center at 7:00 this Saturday with the Wild and Scenic Film Festival. And I really want to make sure that we thank the sponsors of it. Idaho Forest Group is our main sponsor. And a lot of folks don't realize how special a relationship we have with them and with their staff. They're a great organization and have been a great partner for us. So big shout out to them. Also, William Schiller and Steyer, Eichert's, who is providing the No Host Bar, and Pondere Veterinary Service. We'll also have appetizers that are courtesy of Eichert's and William Schiller and Steyer as well. And there's a raft of national partners as well. Earth Justice, Cliff Bar, Peak Design, Clean Canteen, and Sierra Nevada.
It's the rare poster you find Earth Justice and Idaho Forest Group on at the same time.
Bringing people together since 2005.
Yeah.
And again, that's this Saturday. Tickets are sold out, but there might be some floating around. Sounds like you're going to have a wonderful celebration, justly deserved for the hard work you're doing, as you describe it, to keep the momentum going to designate Scotchman Peaks as a wilderness area.
So we can squeeze in one more question. We got 15 years in. What's the next 15 years hold for the organization?
Yeah, that's a great question. Right now, we continue to do the work we do. In 15 years, if I had a crystal ball, I would say we have wilderness designation achieved. We have a community of supporters who value the area, and it includes folks who we might not even have met yet, but it certainly includes people you might not envision coming in to join us in celebrating our 30th anniversary and hopefully our 5th or 10th anniversary of having it actually designated. And this will be true on both sides, in Idaho and Montana. We focused somewhat on Idaho here. Most of your listenership's in Idaho, although I know there's people listening over in Heron and Trout Creek and Thompson Falls streaming us live from time to time. And we have a community there to celebrate as well.
Well, best of luck in the next 15. Yeah. Congratulations on the first 15. That's really a milepost.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thanks for coming in today. What do we have going on here?
Well, Chris? I thought we would touch base on a few other things happening around town. It's Wednesday. There's music occurring in various locations. It's Wine Down Wednesday at the 219 Lounge with Truck Mills and Dennis Wang are going to be playing there 6 to 9 p.m. There's a Bart Budwig album release at the Long Shot. Are you familiar with that musician?
I am. Actually, he did the sound when we had the Little Smokies. He was the sound guy. Bart Budwig. He's a very good musician.
Yeah, and so he's got an album release. He's going to be at the Long Shot. That's the new location there on 102 South Boyer at 7 p.m. He's going to be playing with Josh Hedlund and Maya Goldblum.
Great.
Terrific group right there.
I know. Sounds good. When is that?
That's tonight at 7 p.m. at the Long Shot.
At 6 o'clock, there's an Avalanche...
There's an Avalanche Awareness class. It's free. It's at the Tap Room up at Schweitzer, the Laughing... It's at Laughing Dog Brewing at Schweitzer Plaza in Ponderay. And the class is going to be covering various aspects of avalanche awareness, safety equipment needed, and what you should do if you are a backcountry traveler at all, or even you ski just inbounds. It'd be a very useful class to go take and increase your avalanche awareness, because we've seen over at Silver Mountain this year there was 3 fatalities.
I know, that was pretty tragic. So after you're done with a day of skiing, go over to the Tap Room at Laughing Dog up at the plaza there and get an avalanche awareness class.
At 6 p.m. It's at Laughing Dog Brewing.
Right, Laughing Dog.
Yep. And some things coming up tomorrow. There's a concert at the Panda Theater. Jerry Mulligan All-Stars Concert. This is actually the third in the Festival at Sandpoint's Chamber Concert Series. It's jazz music of the great late Jerry Mulligan. It's performed by the musicians who worked with him. And that begins at 6:30 p.m. Get your tickets now. You can get your tickets at panada.org. And of course, this event is going to support the festival at Sandpoint, and we want to see the festival getting plenty of support.
Absolutely. And tomorrow on the morning show, we have Jim and Jack. They're going to be looking back at the musicians, songwriters, and songwriters who passed away in 2019. So that's always a fun morning of music and a chat with Jim and Jack, music guys.
And I got to say that Jim and Jack have an encyclopedia of music knowledge in their heads.
I wouldn't want to compete against them on a trivia night, trivia.
Music trivia night, not at all. So, and Susie, anything else we want to mention to anybody?
Next week, our guests will be Mayor Shelby Ronstad and City Administrator Jennifer Stapleton, and we'll be talking all things city. Don't forget to go to sandpointidaho.gov/engage and fill out your survey that we talked about earlier on the show. And that survey this time is about growth and land use. And eventually, so they're doing these surveys every week, and they're online, they're easy to take, but they're trying to get a pulse from people in our community of what they want this city to look like, because growth is a big question. So there you go with that.
Yeah, that's a great way to engage and participate and be a part of the community, help shape the future of our town.
Yep.
That's at sandpointidaho.gov where you can take that. And tune in. We'll be asking Jennifer and Shelby, like, so how do you use this information from these surveys, and what's the whole process for the master planning?
And if you have a question you'd like us to ask them, you can send that to krfyradio@gmail.com.
.com.
Yeah.
.org.
It's .com.
It's .com.
Yeah,
okay,
one's .com.
Okay.
KRFYradio@gmail.com.
Yeah. Or go to our website, KRFY.org, and there's a contact button there. Click that, and you can see how to either call us, leave a message, or you can send us an email.
There's another button on that website, KRFY.org, and it's called the donate button. And because we are listener supported, you have an extra $10 or something, send it to KRFY and keep this radio station healthy and strong.
Yeah, we appreciate your support.
Yep.
And with that, we're going to go out. We've been talking about wilderness with Friends of Scotchman Peaks Wilderness. This song is by Bruce Colburn. It's called 40 Years in the Wilderness. So we thought that was appropriate. Have a great week, and we'll see you next Wednesday.
Have a beautiful day.